We like to do things by the numbers. We're all about commerce and community. Welcome to The Upswing, presented by Oricon Bank, the natural choice for all your banking needs. Now for the host that's always on The Upswing, Jeff Sherman.
Now, to business, gentlemen.
Good morning, Wisconsin. Good morning, Milwaukee. Happy Monday. Happy Monday indeed. As always, we're going to start the week on The Upswing with a look at your money and the markets. But Dave Spano is in Boston on business today. So Brian Jacobson, chief economist at Annex Wealth Management, will join us right after the break. I'm looking forward to his analysis for sure. We're going to talk about the return of the MBA. Applications are way up for Masters of Business Administration programs across the country. Wasn't too long ago, though, that people were questioning the ROI of the MBA. So we're going to dive into that. You're seeing a lot more dynamic pricing in stores right now, right? Those digital price tags makes it a whole lot easier for stores to change the price based upon demand or seasonality or even what time of day it is. Demand, dynamic pricing models. This demands answers from an economist. So I look forward to talking to Brian about that. And we're going to talk a little bit about tariffs. Always interesting talk with tariffs. So in the second half of the show, the business of restaurants and reviews on a very local level. I'm really excited to have Milwaukee Journal Sentinel restaurant critic Rachel Bernard join us. And tee up the WTMJ talk and text line at 855-616-1620 to text in your favorite restaurants. Rachel's going to give us, through her lens, what are the top 25 restaurants in the area? And we'll get some insights as to kind of the ups and downs of the restaurant business world. Rachel, a true expert in the space, and I'm really looking forward to this conversation. But as we do each and every morning, let's go two up.
Now it's time for the
1, 2, 2, 2, 2
up on the Upswing.
Trick or treat all over the area on Sunday, but it's kind of heartening to see that a lot of communities are moving towards the actual Halloween date for trick or treating. I saw, you know, we got Brookfield, Kenosha, other markets are saying, all right, we're going to have trick or treating on the actual day, the 31st. So I wanted to dive into some of the money spent on the holiday. And obviously, it's a whole lot more than trick-or-treat. Lately, Halloween has become one big treat for business. Consumers spending an estimated $11.6 billion on this one-day holiday that seemingly has become two weekends. Roughly the same amount of money that Americans spend on children's books each year. It's a massive amount of spending, and it's interesting. You know, you hear the ups and downs of the economy, but consumers continue to spend. It's actually half the amount spent annually on dental care for children under the age of 17. So, hey, let's have a bunch of candy, but let's continue to look at the dental spending too. But really interesting, you know, because not everyone observes the holiday, but the federation that kind of looks at the dollars spent says the typical person celebrating will spend $104 on Halloween. Another place where a lot of cash is being spent, obviously, politics. Tomorrow, we're going to talk to Chris Terry from the Hubbard School of Journalism and Mass Communications at the University of Minnesota. Chris actually lives in Milwaukee and is an expert on political advertising and spend, so we'll get his analysis tomorrow. But the U.S. election is likely to be the most expensive ever, with an estimated $15.9 billion in spending on all federal races, eclipsing the $15.1 billion in 2020. This according to Open Secrets, the nonpartisan group that tracks campaign spending. So if you adjust it for inflation, this election is slightly cheaper than 2020, but both contests are nearly double what the 2016 race cost and triple what elections used to cost in the early 2000s, even adjusted for price hikes since then. Of course, you know, you look back to the 1890s, former Senator Mark Hanna, who ran William McKinley's presidential campaign, famously said, "There are two things that are important in politics. The first is money, and I can't remember what the second one is." All right, we'll continue to talk about money and more with Brian Jacobson from Annex Wealth Management. This is The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman, and you're listening to WTMJ.
The work week is here. Let's begin with your Monday market preview.
Welcome back to The Upswing. We're joined by Brian Jacobson, Chief Economist at Annex Wealth Management. Brian, thanks for taking the time this morning. I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure.
Of course. So I saw this in a lot of different places over the weekend, that the MBA is back. I got an MBA years ago, and I think it was a great way to kind of culminate all my experience and learn in a little different environment. But what do you make about the return of the MBA? I think, I don't know, through the years, there's been a lot of questioning on, hey, what's the ROI of the MBA? But is this good news or bad news for the economy?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. The last time we saw a big surge in interest in the MBA, the Masters of Business Administration, was in 2008. So that was during the global financial crisis. But that was after there had already been a number of job losses. And so a lot mm-hmm. of more white collar professionals thought that they needed to upskill, that they needed to, you know, improve not only what they knew, but also expand it mm-hmm. as well. So upskill and reskill. Yeah. And maybe we're beginning to see that a little bit now, although it's not necessarily with the same job losses that you saw in 2008. So it could now be more about people taking preventive measures.
Hmm. Yeah, and there's definitely that thought that it's about lifelong learning. So I think that approach is, you know, more front facing than it was several years ago. So I mean, that could be one of the things on the trend as well.
And one of the things related to getting the MBA is, what is the ROI? What is that return on investment? Yeah. And the St. Louis Federal Reserve actually did an interesting study back in 2023 showing that the average person with a college education mm-hmm. makes about 13% more per year over those without the college education, but then it increases over time. So it gives you a head start mm-hmm. as far as that salary, and then also puts you on a steeper trajectory. And so it compounds over time. Now, going from an undergrad to an MBA, sometimes the payoff isn't exactly the same. It's mm-hmm. like the biggest jump is going from high school to college, and then from college to an MBA. But nowadays, more and more people are talking about, well, what about trades? Go yeah. to community school or community college, and you can actually learn a trade. That might be more what we're seeing in the future, is instead of graduating from high school and going through the traditional four-year colleges, maybe get into one of these occupations, these professions that are going to likely be in short supply.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Let's turn the tables a little bit to tax planning, and we're almost at the beginning of November, and people want to shore up the finances to make sure they're ready to file their taxes in April. What's new on the standard deductions and tax brackets for 2025? And what should people be doing right now to close out the year strong?
Yeah, it is crunch time as far as for the tax planning that takes place. And this is something we do with clients year round, so you don't feel like you're in a rush to do it in November and December. Yeah. But the IRS did just publish their updates as far as with the tax brackets and then also with the standard deduction. The standard deduction, it went up. For single filers, it's up to $15,000. For married filing jointly, it's $30,000. Hmm. Keep in mind, that is about double what it was prior to 2017's Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. Prior to that, the standard deduction was about half of that. And so you had it where maybe only 69% of tax filers actually took the standard deduction, and now it's up to 86%. So as you've had some inflation, they increase that deduction. More and more people are actually taking that standard deduction. So what it means is you don't get to itemize. Mm. Itemizing, we've actually seen a 5% decline in charitable giving as a result of the more generous standard deduction. There's less tax benefit to giving to charity. So you do it from the heart and not necessarily because, you know, Uncle Sam is going to be helping to subsidize.
I'd like to think we give from the heart first and foremost, though. But, you know.
And most people do, right? So it was a 5% decline in giving. So it's not like it wiped it all out.
Right.
But, it, you know, that worked out to be about $20 billion.
Yeah, that's interesting insight for sure. I want to, I've seen kind of walking the aisles of the stores, more and more retailers going to digital price tags. And you walk by and, you know, the price doesn't change instantly, but it gives retailers that opportunity to change pricing based upon seasonality, maybe based upon time of day and other circumstances as well. So when we come back, Brian, I want to get your take on kind of the role of dynamic pricing in our wonderful retail economy. This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. I love Mondays. It's a great way to start the week with money talk. Brian Jacobson, chief economist at Annex Wealth Management, joins us. So, Brian, I'm sure you were out and about shopping over the weekend, and really, like I, you've seen a lot of the price tags or the price markings on the shelves change to more digital in nature. And it's interesting that, I don't know, whether it's Kroger or Walmart, they're all kind of denying they're not doing surge pricing, but they're adopting new technology that obviously enables making pricing more dynamic. So do you think we're moving towards an era of more dynamic pricing in different sectors?
I do. And I think that it's not just dynamic pricing, but also personalized pricing.
Ooh.
If you go to McDonald's and order through the app, you get one price. Whereas if you go up to the counter and order, you're getting a different price. But this is really nothing new. It's been done in various forms. It's just that they now have new technology and new data to do it. Like if you think about years ago, I went to a nice restaurant and it said if you wanted lobster, it was market price. Well, what does market price mean? That was their form back then of dynamic pricing because you had to ask and it could change as, you know, the supplies dwindled or whatever. But really, if you think about it, all pricing is dynamic pricing if you include your wait time and the inconvenience in the total cost. Like, you know, think about going to Starbucks. They have the same price for a latte, but if the line is really long, you're paying more with your time in line.
Yeah.
And so, you know, as an economist, it's like, well, why not have them charge more and then get that line shorter? But people don't like that. And I think that's one of the things that a lot of businesses are going to have to walk that fine line. They want to maximize profits, but they want to do that over time. And they don't want to engender a sense of distrust in their consumers where they're like, I don't know. I'm not going to go there because I don't know what the price is going to be. That's not very conducive to budgeting purposes.
Right. Yeah. In a world where, you know, convenience drives a lot of things, we want to know what the price is going to be when we get there. But at the same time, it's not always that just because pricing is dynamic and in front of us in a digital nature, it doesn't mean that it's always going to be more. There are times during the day maybe that retailers will say, wow, we want to drive more volume into the store. We'll actually discount prices, right?
That's right. Absolutely. That's one of the reasons why stores over time, they do sometimes have discounts, right? They have happy hour at bars because they want to get traffic in there during those times. They might have those blue plate specials, right? Remember Kmart? They used to have the blue light special where if something was in, they were overstocked on it, they would discount it. So it doesn't have to be a bad thing. I think that where the Federal Trade Commission, I actually identified as a priority this what they call surveillance pricing. So it's not about the time of day and maybe trying to balance inventory. It's about charging different consumers different prices depending upon, you know, your information that they have on you. And that's something that they want to make sure that firms are not going to abuse. So they don't necessarily want to have it where, oh, you just got into an accident and you have a chipped tooth, and so now your dentist is going to charge you extra because you're desperate, right? Yeah. They want to make sure that type of thing doesn't happen.
Yeah. All right. I want to talk a little bit about tariffs. We're talking with Brian Jacobson, chief economist at Annex Wealth Management. So over the weekend, Brian, Donald Trump called the word tariffs. He used the term the most beautiful word. Actually, the direct quote was, it's more beautiful than love. It's more beautiful than anything. The most beautiful word in the world. From an economist's view, do you agree?
You know, I can't speak to the aesthetics of the word, but I can definitely speak to the economics of it. You know, it's a beautiful word as long as you just look at the word itself and look at it in a very narrow sense, but it can have ugly consequences. You know, it oftentimes will benefit a small group while imposing costs on a much larger group and having negative effects over the long term. You know, and there can be legitimate reasons for threatening to use them as a negotiating tool, but they are really a costly solution to any problem that they're supposed to fix. There's usually a cheaper and a more efficient solution. It just requires, I think, getting to the root of the problem to get a better solution. They can lead to higher consumer prices, lower economic efficiency, strained international trade relations. So they're one of these things where I wouldn't just be, you know, kind of throwing them out there as being a what we would call a panacea, where it's, you know, designed to cure everything that ails you.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, it's election talk for sure. I mean, Joe Rogan asked Trump, would he consider replacing income taxes with tariffs? And Trump responded, yeah, sure, why not? And proceeded to argue that the U.S. was the wealthiest when it had strong tariffs in the late 19th century. So,
yeah, I think we're a lot wealthier now than we were then.
Yes.
You know, I'd much rather live today than back then because, you know, I like flush toilets.
That's right. Indeed. All right. So what's coming up for the week ahead? What's on the market watch for the week? Any major things to note?
Yeah, the biggest thing, so tomorrow we get job opening and labor turnover statistics data. That's really interesting about the health of the labor market. Wednesday, a first look at gross domestic product numbers. And then Friday, we get the employment situation report. That's always a big one as far as how many jobs are being created and destroyed on net. We had a lot of hurricane interruptions, though, unfortunately, that's going to distort these numbers.
Yeah, it all goes back to consumer confidence. Quickly, Journal Sentinel Restaurant Critic is coming up next. What's your favorite restaurant in the area, Brian?
I love the Costco food court.
Oh, love it. All right. Spoken like a true economist right there. Brian Jacobson, Annex Wealth Management. Brian, enjoy the rest of the week.
You too, my friend. Thanks.
All right. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. It is Halloween week. Hopefully your shower isn't too scary. But if it is, you know, it might be time for an update. WTMJ and Sidex have paired together to give away a tub or shower conversion. It's your chance to get a full makeover valued at up to $10,000. All you got to do is take a picture of that tub, shower space, and you text it in with the word creepy to the WTMJ talk and text line at 855-616-1620. You submit your picture and you could win a full conversion from our good friends at Sidex. For all the context rules, just visit WTMJ.com. All right, we're going to pivot from money talk to, well, it's still money talk, but it's restaurant talk. It is all restaurants all the time for the rest of the show. Rachel Bernard joined the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel in 2023 as its dining critic. She joins us today in studio. Rachel, I appreciate your time this morning.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
And we're going to kick off the week talking about the business of restaurants, kind of the buzz of restaurants, the best of Milwaukee's restaurants. Your first best of list was published yesterday in print and last week on JS Online. So just first, give us your background, Rachel.
Sure. You know, when I was in journalism school 20 years ago or so, I did not expect that I would be writing about food for a living. I wanted to be a music writer.
Okay.
The job I had previous to this was at Taste of Home magazine, which is a national cooking magazine that's based here in Milwaukee.
Right.
And I was there for about 9.5 years or so.
Okay.
And that was kind of a great transition because as editor of the magazine, I would taste the food. People would submit recipes to the magazine and I would kind of judge them. Our test kitchen would make the food. I would, you know, judge them, critique, especially if they were for contests. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of my first taste. Sorry for that. Judging food.
Yeah, but perfect training for sure.
Yeah.
And it's kind of meant to be that that was your job and that was the path to where you are now.
Sure.
Did you work in restaurants early on? Did you have that age 16 first restaurant experience?
Absolutely. Yeah, my first restaurant job was actually at a Ponderosa Steakhouse my hometown of Greenville, Ohio. So not fine dining experience in restaurants, but I still, you know the ins and outs of the service industry too.
All right. My first restaurant job was the Rocky Rococo's out by the Milwaukee County Zoo on Bluemont Road there. I was a pizza baker. It was great. It was wonderful. Learned a lot and had a lot of fun as well, for sure. So when you look at the restaurant world in greater Milwaukee, obviously just continues to proliferate more and more, kind of more higher quality, just more entrants. But when you look at kind of the from an economic lens, what do you think is the biggest struggle right now that restaurant owners has? Has that changed in the last couple of years?
Absolutely. Yeah. All the chefs and restaurant owners I've talked to are still saying, you know, grocery prices are high for all of us, and just, you know, multiply that for how many groceries, ingredients restaurants have to buy. So food prices are really, really difficult to balance. I think that is, you know, a huge part of their bottom line. And then, you know, there are just rising costs everywhere, point of service mechanisms and things like that. You know, they're just getting hit right and left in many areas.
Yeah, and those costs have to be passed along in some way, shape, or form.
Exactly.
And that's okay. That's the reality of the world we live in.
Right.
So as you look at your day-to-day, how do you plan your day-to-day, Rachel? I'm truly intrigued by this. There's so many places to review and so much eating to be had. How do you plan that?
It's difficult. You know, I've been in the position for a little less than a year and a half, and I'm still learning too. Scheduling is very difficult. There are so many times where I have to cancel or say no to plans with friends and everything. So, you know, I'll kind of look at the new restaurants that are opening. And whenever a restaurant opens, I always wait at least 6 weeks to visit. I just want to give them a chance to like shake out any of the like new restaurant jitters.
Yeah.
So I'll start planning out, you know, a couple weeks in advance before I'm going to visit a restaurant. Sometimes there are those days where I'm just driving around a different neighborhood and I'm like, ooh, I've been meaning to go at that spot. So I just drop in. So, you know, it's a little bit of a mix of planning far out and just dropping in whenever I can.
Yeah. All right. Rachel Bernard is the Journal Sentinel's restaurant critic. She joins us in studio. When we come back, I got to ask about just the anonymous review thing. Is that kind of an outdated tactic? And we'll start to dive into your top 25 list. This is The Upswing. We're presented by Horicon Bank.
Things are okay with me these days. Got a good job. I got a good office. I got a new wife. Got a new life. And the family is fun. Long ago.
Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman, joined by Milwaukee Journal Sentinel dining critic Rachel Bernhard. She has released her list of Milwaukee's best restaurants for 2024. It's been 5 years since this list has been compiled, and this is Rachel's first list as dining critic at Journal Sentinel. First, just a little clarity for listeners and fans. You don't go into restaurants with a bag over your head or anything. Like, that's kind of an outdated tactic for restaurant reviewers, right?
Yeah, it's becoming so a little bit more. I mean, there are still definitely anonymous critics out there, but, you know, I was in college when Facebook became a thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you Google my name, you're going to find 20 plus years of photos of me. So it's kind of, unless I scrub myself completely.
People are going to find you somehow.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
All right. So how daunting is it to put together a top 25 list? I mean, what was your process? Do you have like a big scoring system and this like scorecard that you go into restaurants with?
Not really a scorecard. Okay. There are just things that I'm always going to notice, you know, the service, the ambiance, obviously the quality of the food. But I just go to a restaurant and afterwards, you know, I don't really take a whole lot of notes while I'm there. I just want to make sure I'm immersed in the experience. Mm-hmm. Afterwards, though, I'll just do like a quick write-up of things I've noticed, things I love, things I didn't love. And I just go through that compiled list throughout the year. And then, you know, a couple weeks before I, you know, filed my story, I kind of review my notes, remember some things, and, you know, start chipping away at it.
That's good insight. Be present at what you're doing, and that way you're going to get the best information and the best takeaways.
Exactly.
For sure. So is your list, is it ranked or is it just a alphabetical listing?
You know, I let myself off easy for my first one, and no, just alphabetically. I think I would have broken out in hives if I had to do a ranked list this year.
Well, let's go through the list a little bit, Rachel. Any highlights, any like unexpected entrants that, you know, either you've heard from readers or fans, like, wow, I didn't expect this place to make the list, or it just give us the highlights, the oldest and the newest places as well.
Yeah. Well, if we're talking the oldest, Three Brothers is on the list this year.
Okay.
It's been on it in the past and then it dropped off. You know, I don't think it was on the list in 2019, but Three Brothers is a Serbian restaurant in Bayview that's been around for 68 years. Mm-hmm. So, I just love the feel of that place. It's not super fancy, but it is just very warm and comforting. The food is fantastic and it's an experience unlike any other in the city. So, yeah. That, like Three Brothers, Sanford is a classic.
Yeah.
You know, it's been around for decades too, and it's still, the quality is fantastic. And I absolutely loved my experience at Sanford this year.
And a couple Bartolotta restaurants, Bacchus and Bartolotta's in Tosa are included.
Yep. And Lake Park Bistro.
And okay. All right. So three there. Okay. La Merenda also making the list. That's been open since 2007, I believe.
Yeah. Right.
So a lot of legacy there for sure.
Yeah.
And the small plates there. I mean, that, you know, it was seemingly pretty innovative when it opened, but has really stayed consistent through the years and, you know, just a market favorite for sure.
Oh, absolutely. And what I love about their menu is that it's really globetrotting and you can eat so many different kinds of food from, you know, all across the world. And it all still somehow is cohesive.
Yeah.
It's such a fun place.
As you look at kind of there's been so much of a spotlight from a national lens on the Milwaukee restaurant scene. What lasting effects does that national coverage, how does that pair with your wonderful local coverage? And what are restaurant owners saying about it?
Well, you know, I think especially we got to talk Top Chef. You know, that was huge for the Milwaukee restaurant scene. And I think it gave people who maybe have never been here a little insight into the Milwaukee food scene. Maybe they just think we're, you know, beer, sausages, and brats, which we are, and I love those things, but we are more. So, you know, there are people who are making trips to Milwaukee to try the food because they've seen them on Top Chef. I received an email a few months ago from someone who was following my Top Chef coverage and just wanted to reach out and say, we're going to a wedding in Madison, and now we're going to Milwaukee. We're tacking that on so we can eat at some of the restaurants we've seen.
Very good. So it has a positive effect, without a doubt.
Definitely.
For sure. When we come back, more with Rachel Bernard from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Her list of the top 25 restaurants in the area is out. Also a companion list of some of the best casual restaurants in the market. We'll talk about that when we come back. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Rachel Bernard from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel joins us. Rachel, appreciate your time this morning. I know it's a big day for you. Your top 25 list is out. You know, everyone loves to eat. And I always find there's so much passion around people wanting to take, all right, this is my favorite place. You have to go there. This is why you shouldn't go to this place. This is why, you know, I love that passion that comes with restaurants. It's got to be tough for you to leave places off a list like this. How do you kind of deal with that?
It's extremely tough.
Yeah.
I mean, so many places I really love didn't make the list. And, you know, I really have to go in with a deep magnifying lens.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if there's a little bit of a flub. If the food is not exactly right when I'm there, if the service is a little bit off, if the spacing between dishes is a little bit too long, I really take that into consideration. And even one of my favorite restaurants could be kicked off the list because of that. So
yeah.
it's tough. You know, I love the restaurant scene here and I want to celebrate everybody, but there's only space for 25.
That's right. You know, the good thing is, though, there's unlimited space online and you can write about it down the road,
exactly.
Right?
Yes.
Yes. So you also have a companion list of casual restaurants that kind of helps round out the top 25. What's your go-to kind of a fast and convenient locally owned option that you're like, all right, I need something quick. I need something I know is going to be just really, really good.
Well, you know, I do. You will find me at Vanguard
decent
amount
good
of
option.
Time. It's not too far away. And I just love the vibes there. I love their food has gotten better than ever. I feel like this year there's a new chef. So that's just a fun spot I like to drop into.
Is there a place, I know we do this all the time, and I always suggest to people that they make restaurant lists because you tend to go to the same places over and over because that's just, we're creatures of habit and we go to convenience. Do you have places that you're just, gosh, I always forget about that place for whatever reason?
Oh, sure. I mean, before I had this job, I really, you know, stuck to a few of the same neighborhoods and the same restaurants just like everybody else. Mm-hmm. But it's been nice to kind of explore different neighborhoods that I maybe don't spend that much time in. And when I'm at those places, in those different neighborhoods, you know, there's always a new place that jumps out to me. And I'm like, ooh, I remember a friend telling me about this place. I finally need to go there.
Yeah.
So, you know, I have a huge spreadsheet of restaurants that I haven't been to yet either that I keep just chipping away from. And I always take recommendations from readers, too.
You almost need like a spinning wheel or something. You're just going to spin it and you're like, all right, boom, we have to go to that place.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. All right. So what from a market standpoint does the Milwaukee restaurant scene still need?
You know, I get this question a lot, and my typical answer is like a proper dim sum restaurant, like Chinese dim sum. I think that would be so fun to have in the city. And I think we are lacking like authentic Chinese restaurants in general. We have so many Chinese restaurants, but they tend to be towards the Chinese American side. There is a restaurant I had on my casual list called Sichuan in West Dallas, and they really do authentic Chinese regional fare extremely well. So I'd love to see some more restaurants like that.
Okay. All right. Very good. Yeah. The one place I always forget about for whatever reason is Blue Star on Farwell. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why. It's just, you know, it's a little close to home for me, but like, I need to put that on my list. So if nothing else comes out of this conversation, it's going to be I need to revise my go-to list because it's a little outdated.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, from a diner perspective, how should people use your list to kind of best optimize their experience?
Well, I mean, they can just go through it. And, you know, if they're feeling a certain kind of cuisine or if they haven't been to a specific neighborhood, you know, start from there. And, you know, all these places are, you know, just super fabulous for special occasion meals, but there are a lot that it's just like, it's just a Friday, a random Friday you want to get out there. So, hopefully this is just a good resource for, you know, if you want a celebration dinner, this is a place to go and you can just check it off your list.
Very good. Rachel Bernhard's list of the top 25 restaurants is out on GS Online right now. Check it out. Put it on your make your own restaurant list and get out and support all the amazing places. Rachel, appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you, Jeff.
These are your business headlines from the Milwaukee Business Journal.
A new contract for the Steel Workers Union at Komatsu Mining in Milwaukee and Oak Creek. It provides wage increases over the contract's 4 years, totaling 15% and more, depending on the position. West Bend Harley-Davidson reverses a decision to close its showroom during this winter. After getting feedback from customers, Harley dealers nationwide are experiencing lower sales the second half of the year. Associated Bank deposits increased by over $1 billion in the latest quarter compared to a year ago. CEO Andy Harmening says Associated's customer base is growing. I'm Rich Kirchen with MilwaukeeBusinessJournal.com on News Radio WTMJ.